Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist, where your special education questions meet expert answers. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor, a certified educational therapist, special educator, and your go-to special ed strategist, here to collaborate with families to access special education services, ignite student potential, and erase learning gaps. Together, we'll unlock the services and support your kiddos' needs to thrive. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com. Hello, and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast. I am so thrilled to have you join us today, Susanna, and to kind of talk about your journey and your experience. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Can you just share a little bit about who you are and your background and kind of what leads us up to our conversation that we're going to have today?
Yeah, sure. My name is Susanna Peace Lavelle. I am an author. I'm a speaker. I'm a life coach. I am an advocate for my beautiful and amazing disability community. This is also my lived experience as I am raising a daughter who is now a legal adult. She just turned 18 with myriad disabilities and diagnoses. And so I just am sort of like living and working and breathing in the same space all the time. And I'm grateful, and it has been a very unexpected life, but I'm here and I'm so happy to be of service.
I'm glad that we can have this talk because it is a unique experience to be such a strong advocate that you are and to kind of balance this out with what you were not expecting earlier in life. So before we kind of learn a little bit more about how this journey is taken you and with twists and turns, what is a little known fact that or hobby or something about yourself that people may not know?
Yeah. So actually, I never talk about this, but it's a very big part of my life. I am a like avid tennis player. So I feel like it's important and it does sort of go hand in hand with my life and my living because it is a very therapeutic activity for me. There is something, you know, that proprioceptive input is, you know, whacking that ball over the net, sometimes into the net, sometimes off the court, doesn't matter. It's just moving my body and having something to hit for me is so like non-negotiable. So that is something I do multiple times a week. I have hitting partners. I play matches. I'm just joined this adult league. So it's really fun. You know, wherever I can sort of fit it in, that is my go-to number one thing to do.
It's so important, right? Because I feel like it just clears your head. Whatever the activity is, clears your head. Sometimes you're thinking about work. Sometimes you're thinking about life. You know, I'm a walker and sometimes I'll still have my AirPods in, but no sound. It's just kind of just like in my head. So it's just a movement to move your body and kind of have something to yourself or communal with friends. And that's, we all need that, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I was saying it's just, it's non-negotiable for sure.
Yeah, that's right. You're just a happier person. It's so good.
Yes.
You wrote a book, Your True Self is Enough. And in that, you share your journey from pregnancy to navigating with life with your daughter's unique challenges. Can you just kind of walk us through that experience, just kind of from when it all started?
Yeah, sure. Well, I will say, you know, I have one daughter. I wanted many children. So, you know, my book starts off with actually, you know, my pregnancy, sort of, you know, my journey and quest to becoming a mother. I was, you know, so obsessed with becoming a mother. And so I had my daughter, and I will say that the journey really started like the second that she was born, because she just commanded so much attention from the second that she just came into this world. And I'm sure that's not a unique experience. I'm sure most people feel that way. And especially it's so beautiful to hear your baby screaming loudly as soon as they're born, right? We want that to be the case. It's just that she never really stopped crying. And she was crying and miserable and uncomfortable so much more beyond wanting to eat or needing her diaper changed. You know, it was really next level. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that my daughter, whose name is Arizona, cried for the first 18 months of her life. And so that was sort of my beginning, you know, welcome to motherhood, Susanna. isn't this what you wanted? And so, you know, hence, you know, began this long sort of circuitous up and down journey of just understanding all of my child's unique needs. And it started with allergies, and that moved to asthma, and then that moved to, you know, other interesting side effects medically for her, physically for her body. You know, eczema, was she was covered head to toe in eczema. And, you know, it wasn't until she was almost two that, you know, her skin started to clear up and we had a better, you know, handle on all of the different, you know, foods that she was allergic to. And that's when I first started noticing differences in her development in terms of like just comparing to other kiddos around us. I mean, I think for the first 18 months to 2 years, I was just so focused on her physical health needs, you know, and I wasn't paying attention to anything else. So yeah, it has been a nonstop roller coaster. And I'm so grateful to be here with you today, Wendy, because there were many times that I was just like, I'm not sure I can survive today. Not sure.
Yeah. And in those moments, it feels dark, right? And you're just, and it's hard as that parent heart of fear and love. And then you see other families or caregivers with their little babies, and your experience is so different that it really then plays into just how you're feeling and how you go about the day and interact with the world.
Yes. I mean, I mean, dark is, it barely scratches the surface. It's like this debilitating, endless abyss of just misery. And you're so right. It's like compounded by being out in the world and sort of seeing what everyone else's experience is and realizing that is not my experience and feeling so guilty and horrible that I'm not, you know, ecstatic every second with my newborn baby, you know, being a mother. Again, like literally my lifelong dream has always been to be a mother. And so I just felt so like guilty and ashamed that I could not access joy. And I really literally was like, I am miserable. And that's how I felt. And I was so, you know, trying to, you know, be grateful for everything that I did have, you know, and be so present in each moment. And it was really challenging to access that. And especially in those early days.
Was there one thing, a specific moment in those early days that kind of was almost a light bulb moment? Or was it probably just a compilation of moments that you were like, okay, this is what we need to do next? Because I think it's really hard to go when you're in that kind of, that caregiver role. It's very different almost than a parent in terms of when it's so every day, every second.
Yeah, well, I believe that everything is absolutely for us, for our opportunity to grow and awaken and transform, especially the uncomfortable and the hard. And so when I look back now, you know, I fell into this very debilitating episode of postpartum anxiety and depression, certainly hormonal related, certainly circumstantially because of what was going on in my life. And I had never felt so out of control in my entire life. And I think that I had to hit sort of rock bottom, like literally fall to my knees and just cry out, like, I can't do this. You know, I need help. And yeah. I am not a person who is comfortable asking for help. I am very, very capable. I'm very resourceful. I absolutely need help. I just, you know, it's so hard for me to ask for it. It's almost like I feel ashamed that I can't do something on my own. And so I have always been this sort of independent, even to this day. My parents or my dad is like, you're my most capable daughter. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be, you know what I mean? That's not the, you know, badge of that I want on my back. Like I want to be able to soften and, you know, ask for help, receive help, understand what sort of help I need. And so I feel like that was really impactful and transformational because I couldn't do it on my own. Literally, I literally was like, I'm about to check myself into a hospital, but I have this, you know, baby that I need to care for. So I need to ask for help. And so that to me was just a very, very important happening in my life. It was like a milestone, really, for me. And, you know, that began the journey of just seeking out, you know, ways in which I could feel supported by others and to actually ask for it. So again, it was the scariest time of my life. And out of that birthed this newfound understanding and tool of knowing that I'm not alone, really. You know, at the end of the day, I can always reach out and seek help. You know, not sure where, from where and how, but I know that's possible.
Yeah. I was just going to say, how did you find your people, your group? But you're right that it can change based on Arizona's needs or based on your needs. And you have a core group, but then sometimes you have to reach outside of that to find families and professionals that, you know, are familiar with what you're experiencing so that you're not recreating the wheel.
Yes. And I will say, you know, even though Arizona is, I guess, only 18, I mean, she's a young adult now, but when she was diagnosed with autism and even before then with, you know, all of the food allergies that she started off life with, I didn't know anyone who had, you know, kiddos who had unique needs. You know, I literally didn't. I mean, I think I knew some people who, oh yeah, your kid has a peanut allergy or something, which by the way is also so challenging. And I did not know one other family dealing with autism or any sort of special need or disability, not one. And so I really was like, am I an island? You know, now I feel like there are, you know, so many more resources and we're talking about it more. There's so much support. I mean, the work that you do, Wendy, like, it's just so, I'm so grateful. And back then it was like, okay, who, hello out there, you know? So I just kind of started off there. Like, what do I say? I just started talking about it, you know, like, I don't know what's going on. Something's going on. Somebody help me, you know?
So I don't know kind of how many, like when I first had our first baby, I was one of the youngest cousins. I didn't really babysit. So it was very new. So my question is, you know, did you have some sort of background in this sense and kind of how does that change when you're looking at your parenting style is very different. The way we parent some of our kiddos needs to be different because their needs are different.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, again, I thought I was the expert actually going in because I have a lot of siblings. You know, there were five of us growing up and I was number two. And so I took care of my younger siblings. In fact, my youngest sister was born when I was 13. So she was my little baby. You know, I took her everywhere with me, you know, and I just was like, this is so easy. I mean, you know, what's the big deal? Like, and so I did babysit a lot. You know, I was with children a lot and I loved them. I loved being with them, you know? And so I just felt like I'm very armed with the tools that I need to be a very successful mother, you know? And yet, and still, I felt like a failure every single day, every moment when my child was, you know, crying and screaming and another rash would pop up or whatever it was, just feeling like, okay, I don't know how to take care of this child. You know, I have to learn from scratch, literally, how to help advocate, support this child that came through me.
How did you start to come in terms of preschool, kindergarten, like that educational part, right? How did you start to learn about that process, navigate that process? What was your experience?
Yeah, so I was very naive back then. So when I started noticing there were some differences with Arizona's development, you know, she was around two-ish. And when she was around 2.5, you know, I was like, well, maybe I just need to socialize her a little bit. And there was this, you know, preschool that was literally walking distance from our condo at the time. And I was like, huh, maybe I should just enroll her, you know, for like two mornings a week just to be around some other kiddos. And the reason why I was so excited about this particular preschool is that they didn't have like a potty training, you know, sort of mandate. And Arizona, by the way, was not potty trained at all at the time, like not even close. And in fact, she wasn't fully potty trained until she was five or almost around that point. She just had her own timing with her body and sensory things. And so I was like, oh, there's no potty training. It's like requirement, sign me up. Right. And so that was sort of my first, and I, you know, Arizona was not yet diagnosed with autism. Certainly we were starting to call around like pediatrician, there's something going on. I'm not sure. Please help us. But there wasn't an official diagnosis. So I was like, okay, well, you know, she should be okay here. I'm 5 minutes away. So, you know, let's see how this goes. And so that was my first experience with her being around other kids, really only from 9 to 12, Tuesday and Thursday. Sometimes I would go early and observe her in the yard. And that's when it became even more obvious, like she's kind of, you know, doing her own idea all the time. You know what I mean? Like there's no circle time. She's over there. You know, when they call the kids in from outside time, she's over there. You know what I mean? So just she had words and she was able to, you know, express herself with, you know, language, and she couldn't respond, you know? So it was a very sort of confusing, tricky time of observation for me. I just was so confused about my child.
And then how did you start that process of getting a diagnosis?
Yeah. So one of my sisters who had some kids at the time was having this conversation with me about, you know, my concerns. And she's like, you know, Susanna, I think you need to have her checked out or something, you know, something's different. And I was like, I know, but I don't even know what to do. And she said, you know, why don't you start with your pediatrician? And so I started with my pediatrician, and I will say that it was almost like hitting a brick wall because he was like, well, no, I mean, you know, she walked at 12 months, you know, sort of went through the markers of like milestones that, you know, pediatricians look for in terms of, you know, normal development, right? Typical development. And Arizona had hit all those markers. So I, you know, was like, yeah, but there's still something different, something, no, stop it. You're a first-time mom. You're just worrying too much. It's get a nanny. You know what I mean? Like, you're too anxious. Like, stop it. And I really felt like, again, this shame over me, like, oh gosh, I need to relax. You know, I've been hearing this my whole life, but now maybe I really need to relax, right? But yet and still, like this gut feeling inside of me, I just had this intuitive sense like something else is going on here and I need some answers. So I remember just calling him again, and literally as he was trying to just calm me down and just say, stop worrying, like here's the checklist and here's your daughter, I just burst into tears. And I was like, Dr. P, I need your help so badly. I am so concerned. I just need some sort of like professional. I don't even know who it is. Is there like a developmental PD? I didn't even know. Right. And so finally, because I was like sobbing hysterically, he finally gave me the number to a developmental pediatrician. He was like, okay, I guess if you need this to help calm your fears, you know, go for it. And, you know, best of luck. Right. And so that's when, you know, 6 months later, when I was finally able to get an appointment, right, because the wait list was so long. And, you know, even with my tenacious skills of like calling every day, hi, has there been a cancellation? It still took quite some time. So that's when Arizona was officially diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, sensory processing, you know, apraxia, all of these different fun, you know, words that I knew nothing about. But that even took a while because there were multiple appointments, assessments, you know, observations. I would say when Arizona was 2 years and 7 months old is when we got the official diagnosis. And so that's when it was just like, okay, go time, right? Go time. You know, she's young, early intervention, therapies, get her connected with the regional center. I mean, it was just like, go, my full-time job for the next couple of years, you know? So on the one hand, I was so grateful to receive some sort of I don't know, roadmap, I guess, a little bit in terms of, okay, so there are therapies that I need to get Arizona, you know, involved with right now. And so that felt really good for me because it felt like, okay, now I can actually do something that can be helpful and supportive. And yeah, it continued on from there and has actually not stopped since. You know, we're still, you know, different things look differently now, but we still have lots of support. And I am constantly advocating. I was advocating for her this morning with her school counselor, you know, in terms of getting her in, you know, the appropriate classes with the right support and accommodation. So yeah, it is nonstop. But that journey, you know, I will say again, so unexpected. I felt like, you know, deer in the headlights, like, what am I doing? I don't know, but let me just keep moving one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. And I really appreciate your candidness with that. There are so many families that are either just starting this process or vigorously shaking their head as they're listening to you, because there's something to be said about that intuition, that gut feeling of, I know something's not right. And there's times where you get an answer and you're like, I still don't think that one's right. And so really listening to your gut as to, and being that advocate for your baby and asking the questions. And I've heard many times that just you go to your pediatrician and it's like, okay, you know, for whatever reasons, and it's hard, right? And it's hard. We love our pediatricians. It's hard. And then getting into a specialist, especially a pediatric specialist, takes time. So the whole process, and you get on waiting lists, and if you need neuropsych testing or just any type of sensory processing testing or whatever it is, that takes time, and you're going from one to the other, and it's exhausting and it's overwhelming. But it is such a relief once you do have that roadmap. Once you say, okay, this is it. And you kind of know, I think when you get that answer, you're like, yes, that fits my kid. That I understand. And then you can say, okay, so here's what we're looking at. I'm always such a list person. So I like that. I'm like, all right, this is what we're looking at. All right, let's find the people. Let's set up the schedule. But it's a lot. So what do you do? What do you recommend for parents that are exhausted? Because like you said, it is a full-time job, especially if you're doing multiple therapies per week. And if you're balancing family life and you're balancing work or all of it, you get emotionally, physically drained and exhausted. So do you have anything for parents that you think, you know what, folks that are going through a situation and they're exhausted, these are the things to ask for, look out for, kind of that self-care?
Yeah. Yes. That self-care, like the real sort of soul care, like that inner, you know, what is it that I, Susanna, need right now in this moment? And I think it can shift and change throughout your day, throughout the various seasons of life. I will say that I always like to tell my clients and community that I think we need to start with compassion for ourselves, like just this overwhelming, you know, imagine compassion is like water rushing down over, like just, you know, enveloped in compassion for ourselves. And even to just start there and just say to ourselves, like, ah, Susanna, you know, it is so understandable that you feel so exhausted and overwhelmed and hopeless, and you haven't taken a shower in a couple of days, and forget about, you know, any sort of exercise, and, you know, those donuts were so delicious for dinner. I mean, and so just having this compassion of like, it's okay, you know, sometimes surviving is a feat. And it's also okay to seek out and look for little sort of glimpses or glimmers or slivers of whatever joy can be found in my life right now, you know, and just, you know, starting with the compassion and then just starting to seek out. Or I'm, by the way, I'm a huge list person too. I love that. I write everything down. Pen and paper is always right by my side. You know, I start thinking about what would feel really supportive for me during those days with tons and tons of therapies. I actually found respite in the waiting rooms of those therapies. Like, we would have 50 minutes of whatever therapy. In the last 10 minutes, I would be, you know, downloading with the occupational therapist or the speech therapist or the behaviorist or whoever it was to, you know, understand my to-dos, what are we working on, goals, you know, what can I assist with and, you know, continuing these practices at home. But those 50 minutes, you know, I had my journal with me all the time. I had a book that I was reading. I was like, you know, I'm not going to do anything other than, you know, maybe I would take a walk around the office building a couple of times. There was this one therapy center where there was this beautiful park across the street. And I would just sort of clear my head and walk around for maybe like 20 minutes and then come back and have some time to just sit and decompress. I rarely like to use those times to run any sort of random errands. You know, I was like, this time is for me. And sometimes I had 2 to 3 hours per day of that waiting room, like with the cozy couch, you know, sometimes I brought a little blanket. I mean, I really sort of set up shop to having the intention of like, this is going to be this is my Susanna time. You know, in fact, I would sometimes be so annoyed if there was like another, you know, parent in the waiting area that just wanted to keep chat. You know, some days I was so happy to like, you know, just commune, right? And, oh, you know, we're doing this therapy. It's working so well. How's it going for you? Like, definitely there were those moments too. But other times it was like, I wish that I just had said, don't talk to me. I am not available. So yeah, it was, you know, those little moments really got me through, I have to say. And again, I am a big journaler. I've been journaling my whole, you know, since I was 13 years old, actually. And so I just find that to be the most, you know, outside of tennis and whacking the ball, therapeutic in terms of just getting my feelings out, just right there in the moment. And there were so many feelings. I mean, so many tears on those pages too. So yeah, I mean, just we can't be so hard on ourselves. We are not, you know, superhuman. We are mortal beings, you know, and we just sometimes have to give ourselves so much grace. Like, this is what I'm available to do today, you know, and tomorrow, you know, the sun will rise again and we'll see what self-care, soul care is going to look like for me tomorrow. And I'm going to check in with myself multiple times a day. What does self-care look like for me in the next, you know, 10 minutes, in the next, you know, 3 hours? Oh, I'm going to make myself a delicious lunch, you know, whatever it is, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm hoping people, you know, you've just really said a lot of things in there that were incredibly beautiful and terrific reminders for us parents that are just doing this hard work and losing sight of those tiny moments that may be 50 minutes. They may only be 1 minute one day, but you're right. So hopefully that is, I'm sure, has resonated with folks that are listening. Can you share your personal experience with the IEP process? I know we're going from healing to IEPs, kind of a little bit all over, but I'd love to hear what your journey was like in terms of getting an IEP and kind of what advice would you offer to parents that are really just starting this or wondering, you know, should they request an IEP, that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I know Arizona was little, but there are parents that are listening that their kids are older and trying to figure out what direction to go into.
Yes, absolutely. And an IEP can be available to anyone from the age of 3, right? Here in the state of California, at least, age of 3 up until like, you know, 22, I think. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but the exact ages, but yes. So just to even know that you can ask for an IEP for your child at any time during their sort of, you know, educational journey. For me, it was a little bit fed to me because I was already, you know, in the trenches with Arizona, with the therapies and the support, got Arizona into the Westside Regional Center here in Los Angeles right before she turned age 3, which is sort of like this magical, you know, time that, you know, they're like, get in before she's 3. I'm like, I'm trying, you know? So from there, it was just like, you know, I had the messaging like, okay, so Arizona can get support at some of these, you know, schools now, the public schools in the area at the age of 3 onward. And I was like, what? Did you say free therapy? You know? And so that was, you know, my first you know, sort of foray and introduction into the IEP world, which I knew nothing about up until that point. And so Arizona's first IEP was right when she was three, and now she's 18. And sometimes we've had multiple IEPs in a year. So I've been to probably 20 plus IEPs for Arizona at this point. And I will say that even though things are different now, I feel a little bit more confident in advocating and even knowing what to ask for. It's just another opportunity for you to realize, you know, that you know your child the best, right? You absolutely do. And so that instinct, that gut feeling, maybe you have a partner who has a different view. So this is an opportunity for you both to sit down, or community or whoever is helping you raise your child, about just like, okay, so tell me, you know, let's observe and describe this child, you know? And so really sort of coming in together with some sort of plan of like, this is who this child is. One thing I think is really important for us to understand is the intention of the IEP. And the intention, our intention, is to basically be able to receive and access, you know, as many services as possible, the most, you know, supportive services as possible for our child's needs, you know? And I think that, you know, we can go into an IEP and want to just talk about all of the phenomenally great and amazing things about our child. And that is so wonderful and necessary, you know? And just keeping in mind, you know, there might be some, you know, talk about, you know, deficit, you know, based language regarding your child's development. But in terms of actually getting an IEP, like if you feel like, okay, I, you know, my child is, there's something going on. I have a client right now who's, you know, really struggling because their child got a diagnosis one place, but didn't get the diagnosis somewhere else. And so it's really hard for the school to understand, like, how are we gonna, you know, what's the eligibility here, you know? And so my feedback for her was like, yeah, this is when we get to be tenacious. This is when we get to step up and just keep asking, keep asking, keep asking. I always suggest asking from a place of like, I really need your help. I am so confused. I'm struggling. I'm worried. And by the way, this is mostly all true. You know, actually it is all true. I am overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. And I'm really, can you please help me? You know, as opposed to like sort of demanding, this is what I need. Right. So I just find that this has been so much more helpful. Like I've been more successful in just, you know, asking for help. Now, I also will go into a school and look for the assistant principal, you know, and wait at the front desk and come back again and come back a third day and come back a fourth day. Hi, me again. Here's some bagels. Here's some cookie, whatever, because I just need your help. I just don't know what to do next. You know, I really need your help. And so I feel like it is, you know, it is the tenacity, it is the squeaky wheelness that is all within us, even if it's not our personality. We just kind of have to fake it till we make it, because if we're really keeping in mind the goal here, which is to get the support, by the way, that is available to us, right? That is available to our child. We have to ask for it though, most of the time. You know, all of the supports that my daughter Arizona has now, I have had to fight for, and not in a way of like, you know, dukes up, like, but in terms of just like, no, that's great. Thank you. And she also needs a one-to-one aid. Well, you know, we'll do a functional behavior analysis, you know, the first day of school. Thank you. And, you know, with all due respect, we will not be here on the first day of school without a one-to-one aid, you know? So I just, this is the time for us to just fight for our rights. I'm so passionate about this because, you know, it really is available to all of our kiddos. You know, we just have to keep asking and asking and asking.
Let me ask you this. As you're preparing, whether it was your first one or now that she's 18, for an IEP, how do you, it can be, again, overwhelming as a parent that you know something's challenging, or you know that different areas of school are challenging. What kind of advice do you give for
parents to help kind of prioritize their concerns or to be able to get their concerns out that they can then share in their parent input statement for the IEP or preparing for that IEP.
Yeah. And I think the key word is preparing. I'm a big, big, big proponent of just preparing as much as possible, as much as you can. You know, again, it's overwhelming. It takes time. We have other life things happening and responsibilities. And typically we have time, you know, we have a scheduled IEP and it's usually not something that's like, oh, we can have an IEP tomorrow, right? It never really happens that way. So we will have the time. And so what I like to do, going back to my lists, is just, again, sort of like writing down all of the, you know, sort of characteristics and behaviors and, you know, responses to, you know, different stimuli or situations or events. Then, you know, if your child is already enrolled in some sort of like center-based program or, you know, preschool, even if it's, you know, one day a week or any sort of like social, educational, academic group, whatever it may be, mommy and me group, ask the people around you, right? Ask the people around. So, you know, I'm really prepping for X. I'm prepping for my IEP and I would love your feedback on fill in the blank. I ask my friends, I ask my, you know, siblings, my parents, you know, extended family. I was just like, listen, I will not take anything personal. My goal here, right? Well, sometimes I did take it personal, but you know, our ego gets in the way. But I was like, okay, focus on the finish, Susanna. And yeah, just, you know, getting as much information. I absolutely feel like you can just write notes and notes and notes on just observing your child for a couple of days. If they have therapists, you know, occupational therapist, speech therapist, you know, you quickly realize that you actually have a little team, you know? And then, you know, I think it's also important to, again, if you're going in with a partner or, you know, an advocate or someone who's with you, to be on the same page in terms of, okay, what is our intention? Like literally saying that my intention for this meeting is, you know, the first IEP that I went to, well, I've been to, again, all of them, but the first one, I actually opted to take my mother. You know, my husband at the time, we have since divorced, but at the time he was a little bit like kind of in denial, you know, having his own feelings and response to everything that was going on. And so I just felt like, you know, I need my mommy, you know, I need like my nurturing, cuddly, cozy mommy, you know? And she came with me. My parents lived in California at the time. They have since moved to Ohio, but it was so beautiful. And, you know, I remember like, this is so emotional. It's like, you know, you go around the table and they ask you to just introduce yourself. And I couldn't even do that, right? I said, sorry, I'm Susanna. I'm the mom, right? And just tears. And my mom said, and I'm Sandy. And I'm the grandma. And she started crying. And I mean, and I just want all you beautiful families out there to know, like, you know, I'm an expert at this by now. And it's really hard, you know,
yeah.
It's an emotional journey. And you will get through it. And we are getting through it. And you are not alone. I also found it really supportive in IEP meetings to bring a picture of Arizona, just so everyone there could just be like, oh, you know, right? I also love to bring food. So I would bring like bagels or like, you know, cookies, nothing elaborate, cookies from like Vons that are the, you know, $5 cookies. And, you know, I think people just, you know, want to help you, you know, when there's some personalization. Most of the people in that IEP room do know your child and some don't, right? So well, right? So it just depends on the year and who's available and, you know, it goes on and on. But yeah, I will just say, man, whew, right?
Bringing somebody to the meeting is key. And also bringing your favorite drink. I'm a coffee drinker, your water, just something. It's almost like a little warm binky for me. And then, you know, and you have somebody, and it's even like when you go to a doctor's appointment, you know, if it's a significant appointment, to have somebody there that can hear, that is not at I don't want to say emotionally invested, because we all are emotionally invested, especially if it's your, you know, the grandma or auntie or whomever, but it's just somebody that is, can kind of separate a little bit to say, all right, here are our notes, here's our plan. And I always explain to parents, you know, you're thinking about bell to bell. And so asking, you know, if you observe your kiddo and you see, so whether it's executive function or processing or sensory that you see outside of the day, being able to translate that, like, this would be an impact when they're transitioning in the hallway, or this would be an impact when they're trying to turn in their work, or if the fire alarm goes off. Like, those are things to think about going into that meeting, whether it's your first or 100th, wherever you are, but thinking about your kid and those times, like I said, fire alarm or safety drills, or when you have a substitute teacher, like, what is the contingency plan? Like, what are we doing for that? Because sometimes those are overlooked in meetings. And I think it's incredibly important to have those conversations if they apply to your kiddo. And what would we do?
Yes, that is exactly right. I mean, I have all kinds of accommodations in Arizona's IEPs, including understanding the fire alarm schedule ahead of time, right? All her one-to-one aide literally will take her out of the classroom 10 minutes before, right? So yes, I mean, you know, nothing is too little to ask for, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And also remembering that you can ask for parent training for yourself if you need to, that can be put into the IEP, but also staff training. So there's times that we'll ask for families that I support, you know, right at the beginning of the school year, we're going to do a staff training for this student because of X, Y, and Z. And it can be a 10-minute or it can be longer, just so that everybody knows. Everybody knows. Even it could be the lunch folks that are serving lunch or the custodial folks.
Absolutely.
Just so people know that are going to be seeing your precious baby and interacting with your baby, that they know, this is how I can better support to make a better day, so that we can all have a better day.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It takes an entire village all the time. Absolutely.
What is, like, one resource? We're kind of talking about different things you can put in an IEP and things to think about. Is there a particular resource or comment that's popped up that you're like, this is gold, why doesn't everybody know about it?
Yeah. So I think that sometimes we forget, and especially if our child is, you know, connected to the regional center, and certainly if you're having an IEP, there is a school district, you know, support behind, you know, everything. But, you know, with the regional center, there are so many, like, free resources that, you know, I think we sometimes forget about in terms of advocacy, in terms of having someone at the IEP with you. You don't have to, like, go out and hire an attorney necessarily, right? There are parent support folks who are just available throughout your area that would be so happy to support you, other, like, sort of caregiving parents. I have found this amazing resource for moms specifically called wearebravetogether.org. And it's an executive, my friend Jessica, well, she's now my friend, but I met her. She's the executive director and founder. She has three kiddos, one who has a rare chromosomal disorder. And so she is, you know, she built up this group of, you know, supportive mamas around the world. I think there's like 2,700 of us now. Yeah. And she's an amazing resource, but there's, you know, a Facebook page. We're always, like, on there asking for hints and tips before we're walking into an IEP. You know, there are moms that have kiddos that are adults, you know, some that are 3, 4, 5, some that have, you know, all kinds of, like, medical, you know, all kinds of unique needs and disabilities, right? So that to me has been just like a go-to in terms of whenever I have a question about, yeah, you know, guys, I'm looking for, like, a social skills sort of, you know, support thing for my daughter who's 18, who likes these things and wants to be around other girls, right? So certainly it has been very helpful with regard to, you know, hints and tips and, like, life hacks when it comes to getting what we need for our kiddos. Yeah. And especially in the IEP process, for sure.
I'm going to put that in our show notes and check it out myself. I have not heard of that, but I love the title and I love the camaraderie and the just being able to ask questions.
Yeah.
Right. So reflecting on your journey, what are some of the most important kind of lessons that you've learned about parenting Arizona?
You know, I feel like she has taught me to be present and awake to this life. I feel like if she hadn't been my daughter, if we hadn't had this sort of joint parallel experience of living together as human beings on this earth, I feel like I would have been much more numb to life. I think that I would have just sort of rotely gone through the motions of, okay, well, you know, I need to get my kid into this school and then, you know, they need to have good grades and, you know, be well-rounded and play some sports and play the piano and, you know, kind of the way that I was raised. So I would for sure be a tiger mom. So like, you know, I grew up in an Asian household. My dad is Asian, Taiwanese. My mom is American. And so I feel like I would have absolutely been like the worst, you know, strict, annoying parent wanting my child to like overachieve in every single area of life. And because that wasn't going to be, you know, my path, I had to learn a different way. And I'm so grateful that I have. I think that I am, you know, again, like just every moment, even driving my daughter to school this morning, you know, she's a junior, she has two more years left in high school. And even though she wants to listen to, you know, loud K-pop in the car, I'm like, okay, so you know what? I am going to enjoy that I'm able to drive my child to school. I am going to have my black tea when I get home, which is my fuzzy, warm and fuzzy binky. And I am going to take a breath and just sort of be in this moment and appreciate what is. That is something that I wish for every parent to be able to access. It is available to us. Sometimes it's just, it feels impossible to access. I know this because most of the time I feel that way. But coming back to that intention just reminds me like, okay, so I have this moment. You know, this is what is real and true for me right now in this moment, and everything is okay in this moment. So yeah, I love all of the opportunities for me to awaken. I'm like, okay, I'm done awakening. You know, I would like to chill out now and relax, please, with a different kind of drink. Thank you. You know, so yeah, that's what I would share.
How did you name your book? I love the title.
Yeah, I love this question. So my the title that I originally had that I was like so obsessed with that came to me, you know, as an epiphany when I was on the acupuncture table getting treated for anxiety and depression when Arizona was 6 years old was the original title was A is for Arizona because all of her diagnoses happened to start with the letter A, you know, so autism, allergies, asthma, auditory processing disorder, eventually ADHD, anxiety, everything started with the letter A. And I was like, huh, you know, we're doing all these therapies and, you know, treatments for the symptoms of all of these diagnoses, but really, you know, A is for Arizona. A is not for autism and ADHD, all of these things, right? So I had this great epiphany and I was like, ah, this is brilliant, right? And then now, you know, as Arizona is getting older, as I'm writing this book, she's like, yeah, I don't really want you to write anything about me. And I was like, this is my story. This is not your story, you know? And, you know, but ultimately, you know, the book as it is now, you know, as you know, like inside the book, I just list Arizona as the letter A, you know, that was sort of our compromise. And then I said, okay, well then if that's going to be the case. And I honor that. I respect that. I honor that. I would be grateful if you could write the foreword, you know, and you could let readers know, you know, what are some of your thoughts as they go into this book? And one of the things that she said in the foreword was, I just want people to know that your true self is enough. Oh. And so that's where it came from. So she said it. They're her words. I can't. So I she embodies that. She believes that. She's so like, I like me, you know? And I'm just like, I need that.
We need more of that in the world.
Yes. Yes. So every time I see the title, I'm like, yeah, okay, Susanna, your true self is enough. Yes, it is. Absolutely. You are whole. You are complete. You are perfect. exactly as you are.
Beautiful soul and a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So kind of as we wind down, what is one thing that I didn't ask you or didn't know enough to ask you that I should have asked?
Let's see. Well, you know, I think, you know, people, you know, who are listening might consider that I have everything figured out. And I will be the first to tell you that I absolutely do not. At every, you know, I've been doing this for a while, but everything is always changing. Things are shifting, they're changing. I would say that probably my biggest lesson in all of this is to learn how to be flexible and to learn how to go with the flow without sort of attaching or connecting to anything. But what I also want people to understand and know is that life is tricky. You know, life is messy. It's okay to fall apart multiple times a day. Most of the time, I feel like a hot mess. And I am saying that in full transparency and vulnerability. Like, you know, it's okay if you need to scream at your child, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to raise your voice. So we can't access like this conscious parenting paradigm every single second. And that is okay. It is absolutely okay. We have every moment possible to be able to start over. You know, like I said, the sun will rise again tomorrow morning, right? And hopefully we will rise too, and we'll be here, you know, and we'll be able to choose many things. You know, we have agency over so many things. But one of the things that we need to also understand is that we are human beings. We are allowed to play. We are allowed to cry. We are allowed to check out. You know, I don't have it figured out. And, you know, the answers are all within us.
So. I always say sleek on the outside, messy on the inside.
Yeah. Ugh. So messy. So messy. Yeah.
My final question, if you had a billboard for parents with a tip, what would it be and why?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I will tell you this. It would be find your joy.
Yep.
Period. Find your joy. Everything else will come after that in terms of the to-do lists, logistical things, you know, I say, find your joy, at least have that to be your intention that I am seeking out joy. I'm looking for it. I don't know where it is or what it looks like. I can't access it, but just to have that intention, find your joy. You're in all the little moments, big moments, whatever it may be that will keep you going.
So important. Important. All right. Susanna, this has been just a pleasure. You're so easy to talk to. And I know this conversation is going to resonate with folks that are listening, again, wherever they are in this process, starting at midway, feeling like towards the end, but really helpful. So I appreciate your time. And we're going to put how to get your book and the link in the chat and all of that are in the chat, in the show notes, all the places. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Wendy. And thank you for all of your offerings as well.
You bet. Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddos' success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.